Thank you for joining Voices of Homelessness. I'm your host, Donald Whitehead. I am the Executive Director of the National Coalition for the Homeless. Tonight, we'll be talking to a person who has themselves experienced homelessness so that you, the viewer, can really understand the true impact of homelessness, how people get there, how they get out of it, and you will be able to dispel some of the stereotypes that you've heard in the past. This is a real issue affecting millions of Americans, and it's very different from some of what you've heard in the media, some of what you've read in papers. These are real people. They are human beings, and they deserve to be given the opportunity to get through this issue. Some people that you'll hear on our show are currently experiencing homelessness. Others have had the wonderful opportunity through services, through wonderful people to transcend that experience. So tonight, please join us. Please stay engaged. Please make sure that you tell somebody about the Voices of Homelessness. The goal of the National Coalition for the Homeless is to end homelessness once and for all. And we hope that you'll join us in that mission as well. If you have not done so before now, please sign on to the Bring America Home Now campaign. Please go to our website at www.nationalhomeless.org, and you'll find out more information about all the work that we do to end homelessness for every single person in the richest country in the history of the world. So I thank you for joining us. We'll get right into tonight's program. I have a wonderful guest tonight. I think you'll agree with me at the end of the show. Her name is Tiffany Devernay Smith, and I hope I pronounced that right. You all know, if you've listened to me for a while, sometimes names are not my strong suit. So Tiffany, you pronounce it yourself, and we want to start out with you just telling us a little bit about your story. Please help us understand how you got to the issue of homelessness and how you got through the issue of homelessness. So Tiffany, welcome to Voices of Homelessness.
Thank you, Donald Whitehead. My name is Tiffany Duvernay Smith. Thank you for being willing to be corrected. And just to go into exactly how I became homeless is I found myself for the first time in a domestic violence relationship. And from arguing in the morning, I got fired. And that led me to being unemployed for 12 and a half years. But those first 2 years, I was on unemployment. And it was at the age of 36 that I became homeless. And this is after having a fantasy childhood, after being super involved in my Bible, after just being an adult, working in corporate America, having my own apartment, car, things like that. So stable, what I would think is just a normal, healthy, productive kind of life, right? And until I met someone, then everything changed. And then just to get into the homelessness, my rent was going up $100, like effective June 1st that year. And I was also running out of unemployment at the end of May, trying to figure out how I was gonna pay my rent, let alone an extra $100. And so this is, started me being evicted from a place where I lived for 6 years. So that's the actual story of how I became homeless and began sleeping in my car and doing some couch surfing and things like that.
So I wanted to just get your explanation of how you got there, and what we'll do from now is just have a conversation and kind of dig into, because your story is atypical. Most people, when they think of a person experiencing homelessness, they think of a person, they think of a male, they think of someone with a substance abuse issue or someone with a mental health issue, but you are far from that. Mm-hmm. And we know that in some whole cities, the issue of domestic violence is the major issue for families in homelessness. And so we know that that's a reality. So what happened? What came about to bring about the change from being a person experiencing homelessness and you sit in your car, which can be a very dangerous situation? What brought you out of that situation?
So I will say a very dangerous situation on the streets of Los Angeles, California.
Yes.
Okay.
Where right now is probably the epicenter of outdoor homelessness in the country when people talk about the worst examples. And we'll get into kind of where you are now, because I think it's an amazing transformation. But it is a very dangerous place because, you know, Skid Row is the place of nightmares for many people.
Exactly. I was terrified of going to Skid Row. I was terrified of going to a shelter. But I do want to add something, which was mental health. So it's traumatizing on your way to being homeless, trying to figure out how to getting housed, being newly housed, and navigate without the fear of being homeless again, right? This is all traumatizing. So I cannot say that I escaped without my mental well-being being affected.
Absolutely.
So I do have depression, anxiety, PTSD, that can be triggered whenever. So, and I think that this is the effects of trauma just in general, whether it's from the relationship or the homelessness or the law enforcement contact that's connected to those situations as well.
Absolutely. There's a series of cascading situations that really do induce trauma into most of the people experiencing homelessness. I think that trauma is really underestimated, even for those people where it might be mental health or substance abuse as the predominant cause. That definitely is affected by trauma, whether it's the trauma of domestic violence or childhood trauma, or even trauma related to racism. We know that that kind of trauma, all of it affects you the same way. So I think you dispelled one myth right there that I wanted to just kind of hold on to for just a second. Many people, and this will be surprising to some of our listeners, when they talk about mental health issues within the homeless populations, sometimes it's the homelessness that causes the trauma or mental health or behavioral health issues. It's not something that people bring to homelessness, is something that homelessness brings to the individual.
Yeah, and everyone is, each of us is such an individual that you cannot look at every person through the same discriminatory lens with all the stereotypical, right? Labels, et cetera, that go along with it. And this is for everyone, because I am about stigma reduction. I know I'm not the typical face of mental health. I'm not the typical face of domestic violence, not the typical face of law enforcement contact, and whatever else I left out, the mental health, homelessness, domestic violence, law enforcement contact. I just know that I'm not that face. And so I hope that I am the face of stigma reduction.
Absolutely.
And that if it can happen to me, it can happen to you. And that if we can be more equitable in the way that we view people and treat people, you know, our society is really focused on being anti-racist and looking at other people through an equitable lens.
Right.
And I believe that we need to do that toward homeless people who are currently and people who are formerly homeless.
And, you know, that is such a true statement that if we were able to see people as people, and that's why we talk about the experience versus talking about, we don't use the term homeless people when we can avoid it, because we all make mistakes. I'll make that mistake on this podcast at times. But we talk about people in people-centered language, because you're right. There's such a variety of people that have encountered this experience. But there's a lot of people, especially right now in our country, who are spreading this hate and this fear and this stigmatization around people. There's a group that is really responsible for some new things that are happening in California around involuntary mental health placement. So there's a group that's spreading that message that everybody on the street is someone who is there because of either substance abuse or mental health. There's no other entry point, and that permanent supportive housing doesn't work. We have to continue to dispel that rumor and break down that stigma. And I think your appearance, your professional demeanor absolutely does that. And we'll talk a little bit more about your professional work, because I think that's amazing as well. I appreciate you bringing to light, you know, just a different face, a different voice. And that's what the goal of this show is, to ensure that America understands fully the issue of homelessness. So I appreciate you bringing that. Now, what was the intervention for you? Was it transitional housing, permanent housing, permanent supportive housing? What happened? What changed your dynamic?
You know, my advocacy hat wants to start going toward what could be better.
Right.
Let me answer the
intervention. But we can talk about that too. This is a conversation. I want people to know what could be better.
For example, when I was in this relationship and not in tune that I was in an abusive relationship, I was being triggered to some teenage experiences and just not understanding it all. And in seeking help, I know I got services for 2 years. And knowing what I know now, I know one of those therapists would have been the most beautiful person if they slid a power and control wheel across that table and at least let me read it and process it and talk about it. You know, it would have really done me some good.
Right.
But I had to discover it on my own that this is too toxic for me. I no longer want to be in this. I was like, 5 years. So intervention within about the 4.5 year mark, when I asked myself, can I do another 5 years with this guy? And all I heard was no. No. You know, so at the 5 year mark, I started trying to make my break, and I flip-flopped a little bit. But what happened during this time is, this is during a time of homelessness. We were together. And then even during my homelessness, we're still together. So I found myself going to the Department of Public Social Services for cash and food stamps and crying to my worker that why I've been trying to break up with him for these last 4 months of this year. And why am I going back? And I know I'm going to get the same thing. Like, I don't get it. Mm-hmm. So she had me do a questionnaire, and she sent me to domestic violence services. And they put me under like a mental health umbrella, is where the domestic violence services fall under. And so 90 days, I stayed in these services for 5 years, and 90 days in is when all of the awareness that I was learning, it gave me the courage, the confidence, the wherewithal to make my smooth getaway. I call it the stop, drop, and roll.
Awesome.
Away from my overgrown gorilla maniac.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I am glad you were able to escape that situation. That's not something that anybody should ever endure. I certainly can empathize with you. I grew up in a household that was filled with that kind of trauma and violence, and I know the after effects. Glad you were able to get that support. Now, keep us going on your timeline. After you got that support, you found some housing after that.
So I do want to say, because mental health is a component, I do want to say I had like 12 sessions of depression therapy because my regular primary care doctor referred me. Mm-hmm. And then that therapist referred me to PTSD therapy. I had 40 sessions with someone and I did group therapy. So I was on a mission. I was on a healing journey. I was focused on reprogramming myself and how do I never experience this again? Why did I pick this person? Why did I stay so long? And I was just dead set on healing and dealing and inner work and loving myself, doing all these certifications to help other people, doing certifications to help and strengthen myself. And then my journey has a very spiritual component, like where I was living in someone's garage without them knowing it, asking the Lord to come get me out of the darkness. Hmm. And he came and got me out of the darkness.
And what did that look like? Did he work through other people?
Mm-hmm. Like making an emergency call to some people from the church that I left when I went to this toxic relationship. So it took humility. I called, it's a married couple, and I had a real good rapport with the husband. And so I called him, and he let me know that I could come stay over there.
Awesome.
And so I did. And then what happened is I was doing something else to strengthen myself. I was doing physical training. So I was taking boxing lessons from an LAPD officer, a lieutenant. And I finally told him what was going on with me. And he introduced me to someone who sat on the board of directors of two homeless shelters. So she had me tour a homeless shelter. And she also connected me to someone who offered shared housing. And it's different than it looks these days. This is shared housing in 2012, actually. Shared housing. And just there with strangers, that's what I chose over the shelter, just out of fear, like mentioned earlier, of Skid Row. I went down there too, to a place for services, and I was like, I can't do it. And even the shelter, I was like, I'm just afraid for any of my belongings to get stolen. I'm afraid for somebody to just be aggressive or try to want to fight or something like that. I want to share some experience about that shelter that broke my heart. Going in, I was led toward the women's side of things. I didn't even know there was a sign. But on the way out, the door is open, full of Black men. It really got to me. And I remember my response. I was like, this is where all the Black men are?
Wow.
And I hadn't been there. I went to the location where I needed to go on Skid Row, but I hadn't been all down up in there yet to see even more Black folks scattered all over the street.
Wow.
And I just think that our nation needs to be on a mission to get Black folks off the street.
Yeah.
Because if this is the largest population, everybody's going to get swallowed up in between. It's not discriminatory at all. You help the person who needs the most help. Nobody's going to get neglected in that. It means everybody is going to be seen as a person.
Yes. And, you know, mental health is not something that's visible. It's something that we don't see. And unfortunately, you touched on, wow, that's powerful, that image of kind of seeing a shelter full of Black men. And unfortunately, we know that that is probably a common occurrence. Black men Our Black people in general are three times as prevalent in the homeless population as they are in general population. And I think in LA, it's probably about six times. Some of our bigger cities, 80% of the people in a homeless population are African Americans. And, you know, we have seen recently how mental health plays a role in that. We've seen a dramatic increase in suicide when it comes to African American, especially young African Americans. I think that number, if I'm reading it correctly, was up about 60%. So there's all these things that are the communities dealing with. And on top of that, you have a stigma about mental health in the African American community, especially, and the lack of resources. There just aren't many mental health professionals that look like people that are people of color. And
Black men get killed because of this.
Absolutely, all the time.
And this is a big shift in my journey has to do with that, with Trayvon Martin, Philando Castile, was it Eric Brown and a few other people.
Ahmaud Arbery.
I was crying so much that I called someone. I was like, what can I do besides have breakdowns on my bed and protest? So she recommended that I start attending these public safety and justice committee meetings. And when I went to sign up, I saw that there was also mental health committee meetings. I was like, oh, that's why I'm really here. So I started doing both. So this is 2014, and this is where just listening, and there were opportunities for public comment. So this is where I found my voice and started speaking up and feeling empowered and feeling heard and making changes. So that's a part of my shift also to advocacy, has to do with how Black men are viewed and gunned down. And Black women, just Black people in general.
And I wish we could talk about that for a longer period of time, and maybe we'll revisit that issue. As you know, I work on racial equity. And that's a big part of what I do, trying to fix the stigma, fix the disproportionality. We got a long way to go. And so we could talk about it for a long time. But I want to talk about you because I want people to also understand what you did. You took that opportunity, that experience, and you ran with it. So you're an advocate. In Los Angeles, you're helping to pull people out of that situation. You're working on racial equity issues. Tell us a little bit about that. What are you doing now? We heard what happened, how you got there, how you got through it, and what are you doing now? And I think this is so important because another stigma is that people don't give back, that people get whatever they get resources-wise, get through the issue of homelessness, and they just keep going. And that is true, and that's part of why we haven't been as effective in ending the issue, because we don't have enough people that stick around and fight for change. However, that is not your story. And so tell us a little bit about what you do in the advocacy world.
So my advocacy is city, county, state, and federal. And I was just pulling up something. So I really had to look up definitions and decide who I am. And so I came up with systems reform advocates. And I have a cheerleader in my life who submitted paperwork for me as a systems reform champion. And I tried to dissect that and get away from it, and I just recently decided to keep that. And my focus right now, there's a journey to all of these places, right? But my focus right now is elevating people with lived experience to leadership, domestic violence survivorship, oversight and accountability of the homelessness response system, mental health stigma reduction, alternatives to incarceration, and equity.
That's
racial
a lot.
Equity and equity for people with lived experience.
And you're a member of the Los Angeles County LHASA, and tell me the acronym for LHASA again.
LAHSA is the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority,
which is one of the largest in the country. Really powerful. It's been in the news lately because of the need to make sure that you guys are adequately compensated. But I know that you're a big part of that organization and doing some amazing things.
So yeah, with LHASA, I'm their advisory group coordinator, responsible for their lived experience advisory board, which is made up of approximately 20 people with lived experience and homelessness who serve in an advisory role to LHASA and its partners.
Yes, and really have heard some really fantastic things about your work. We actually, the National Coalition, works out in LA on helping communities develop racial equity plans. So I've worked with some of the members and really appreciate the work that is starting to be done. I was a little surprised, and, you know, kind of the myth of Los Angeles is that it is a really kind of hip town, and, you know, people are a bit more progressive, but around the issue of racial equity, I didn't find that to be the case as I've started to work with some of these communities. So tell me about your racial equity work. How has that landed in a place like Los Angeles?
I think I do a lot of secret work that people don't know about.
Okay.
And move my schedule around and evenings and weekends. So I would say my racial equity work, my first consulting gig was with the Corporation for Supportive Housing. I should say CSH, formerly known as the Corporation for Supportive Housing.
Right.
And it was a real privilege to receive communication about being the first editor of their new anti-racist framework.
Oh, awesome.
I would say that it was a real confidence booster that someone said, you are the Black woman with lived experience that we believe can edit this document that 24 people contributed to. And I'm like, what? So I only said yes because somebody believed I could. I didn't think that it was something that I could actually do. So this is me, or I wasn't working yet. So some brainwashing, and I feel like kept me from being in full-time employed and like back in that type of groove. So I did part-time work in the afternoon, working with children, helping them learn the game of chess. And then my daytime life is the advocacy world.
Awesome. And it brings you all the way to D.C. next week, right?
It brings me all the way to D.C. next week. I've been doing some racial and ethnicity work related to HUD. I'm also about to do racial equity work with CalICH. And this is lived experience work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As the voice of lived experience, yeah.
And so you've had a wide range of experiences. You've been on both sides of this issue. If you were speaking to the audience that'll be listening, what would you say to them about people that are experiencing homelessness in general? What would be your message for those that don't know about the issue?
My message is that think about why people are homeless. I think it's gonna take you back to racism. which I believe is the reason that our nation is so focused on racial equity. Mm-hmm. And what is racism? And I don't say this to be offensive to anybody. I do know that racism is not the white man. Racism is the evil spirit of hatred. So if the evil spirit of hatred is what has led to so much homelessness, then what you're really combating is the evil spirit of hatred. And the only way to do that is with love and with justice. So if you can't come into the work with your heart, see, I believe we all have love and justice running through our veins, even the worst racists. I mean, however you got to be there, be that way, I don't know, but you initially had love and justice running through your veins, it's still up in there somewhere. And so all that to say is that me, when I'm speaking to affect change, or helping to build a policy, or, you know, working with a policy draft or something like that, I believe that, you know, as I'm saying, this is how I was treated, continue to treat people this way, or don't ever treat anybody the way you treated me ever again. And then because from being so involved in the community, I still know what's happening because people tell me. So as I'm speaking, what I'm really doing is infusing love and justice into that policy. Because I really believe that the person who needs us, the person who needs services, the person who needs housing, the person who needs healing from trauma, that what they're begging for in the pit of their soul is love and justice.
Awesome.
It's gonna come through the person that's in their face, who's mandated by a program, that's mandated by a policy that people with lived experience contribute to. And unknowingly, what are they contributing? They're contributing the love and justice. They're contributing to the answered prayer. They're contributing to the cry. And so if you infuse it in the beginning, if this is your intention from the very beginning, it's gonna hit the person who's going to get the voucher, who's going to get the deposit, who's going to get the furniture, who's going to get the keys, who's, you understand what I'm telling you?
Absolutely, absolutely.
But it's because we care. We care enough to not send the caseworker on their way because they completed their hours. We care enough to give incentives for them to stay the same way we give people and teachers incentives to stay in the ghetto. Why aren't we doing that? We care enough to compensate the people who are doing peer support to the homeless population, because you better believe it's the advocates that are handholding everybody in between the broken communication that is going on for free.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
There's a lot to request, and I look forward to love and justice that people will experience as a result of those of us who have the power to make change and affect how other people will be affected.
Amazing. Thank you so much. But I'm not going to let you go yet, because I want to hear what you would say to somebody who is going through a similar situation or any situation where they encounter homelessness. What would you say to them?
Because everybody is so different. I know that my answer is not going to be satisfactory to every person. Help is coming. I do believe that. Help is coming. And then to a person who is able to really grasp what I'm saying is, you have to have hope no matter what. That your journey is actually spiritual. You can't rely on people and trust people. And that in the end of it all, especially a lot of times it's some type of drama that's responsible for our trauma that we need to heal, and sometimes we need corrective thinking. So I really do encourage cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. I encourage dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT. And I really, 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 if I could say something to another homeless person or another person struggling, I would just say, if you can focus on your mood, how your mood is affected, is you focus on your positive thinking, positive activities, positive people interactions. And with what's going on with COVID and mass shootings and just things in our society, if we can all stay focused on fitness, nutrition, hygiene, sleep, these are things that fell off for me in my stress in 2021 and 2022. And these are the things to get back to for my self-care. If I don't do anything else, I need to walk, I need to hydrate, I need to get good sleep.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Such really rich, powerful information for our listeners. We gotta have you back, because we could go on and on with just your amazing conversation. Your passion, we can feel it through camera here. So we really appreciate you. We look forward to partnering with you in the work to end homelessness moving forward. Tiffany DuVernay-Smith,
yes.
Did I get it right? Thank you so much for joining us on Voices of Homelessness. And I thank all of you for joining us. It's always just such a real pleasure to talk to real people with real voices, with real passion. And if we listen to them, we'll end this situation for people once and for all. We do not have to have homelessness in this country. It is the richest country in the world. People do not want to be homeless. They're forced to be homeless by conditions, by trauma, by a whole series of things. And we can do better. So if you have the opportunity to reach out to somebody, to be that blessing that can help them get through this situation, please take the time to do it. Everybody deserves a home in this country, in this world. And I hope you'll do whatever you can to make that happen. I hope you'll join our campaign. Again, that's the Bring America Home Now campaign, www.bringamericahomenow.com. And please visit our website, the National Coalition for the Homeless. Join us on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter. We want to end homelessness, and we need your help. Thank you for joining us.